Hey everybody, what's going on? Welcome to another episode of Your Intention Matters. My name, of course, is still Paul Madat. Thank you very much for freeing up the time. Happy New Year to you. It is early January as we record another episode here. So today I have Tim Hind. He is VP of Sales at a company called Heartcore Business, coming to us from beautiful San Diego, California. Tim, Happy New Year, man.
Happy New Year to you as well, Paul.
Thank you. I appreciate you allocating the time. Do me a favor, say hi to everybody, provide a quick intro, and let's get ready to roll here.
Hey there. As Paul so eloquently put, I'm in San Diego. My name's Tim Hind. As you can tell, I'm not American. I'm British, although I've been here for many years now. I love being in San Diego. It was never on the horizon that I was going to end up here. And through taking chances, rolling the dice, I've been fortunate enough to travel the world and make my last stop San Diego. I just can't think of anywhere else I'd rather live.
Yeah, it's a beautiful part of the world. And so, Tim, I know you're from the other side of the pond, as you were saying. I have two brother-in-laws. Both of them are from the UK, both from England. I have one from Liverpool, and the other is from, I think, is it Wolverhampton?
Yeah.
So I'm curious about something before we get into your story here. When you call back into the UK, or when you have traveled back there, to them, has your accent faded away?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
But more importantly, I speak to my mum every week on the phone like a good son. And just speaking to her for half an hour, I will come off the phone and I'll start speaking to my wife, and she'll say, "Sorry, what did you just say?
English,
my,
please."
My English accent comes back very, very strongly.
Oh, I see.
And I come from the Southwest, which has a very distinctive accent. And so my wife just can't understand me. So, yeah, it works both ways.
I love it. All right, I love it. Listen, thanks again for being here. Let's get into your story then. So as you know, the title of the podcast is called Your Intention Matters, and that's really built off of my premise that nothing is really given to any of us and everything is earned. And most of us in the world of sales and sales leadership never thought we'd even get into sales, let alone, you know, really sustain a career in it. And knowing what I know about your background here, I think you absolutely fit the bill for being on the podcast. And so you're ready to roll? Let's jump into it.
Let's do it.
All right, Tim, we go back in time on this podcast episode. We're going back to late 80s, early 90s. It's hammer time, man. Late 80s, what a glorious time. I mean, Reaganomics, Bush is in office, and the world was just a little bit different back then. You are Hendon Police College.
Yeah.
All right. So talk to me about what was your vision then? Criminology, you know, police, law enforcement. What were you doing? What were you thinking you'd end up doing going to police college?
It goes right back to when I was 5 years old.
Five?
And the local police officer came to my school with his police car and put the blue lights on and put the two-tone sirens on, etc. And I was
You're
hooked.
So old.
And from then on, all I wanted to be was a policeman. And so I just, everything I did was geared towards getting into the police force. And I was really lucky. In 1986, I was enrolled into Hendon Police College. I did about 5-6 months residential there, and then 18 months of intensive training afterwards with senior officers, and was then set free and loose on the public. There was no plan past getting into and being a police officer. And once I got in and I saw the opportunities that were there, my career goal was just to be on the street police officer. I didn't want to specialize.
Okay.
Because specializing, as many of you know, takes you degrees further away from the job you originally joined and gave you the passion. And I didn't want to lose that.
And so did you actually become a police officer?
Yes, I did.
You did.
I did five years as a police officer.
Yeah. 5 years. Okay. So you had me curious here. So from a little boy until an early adult, this is all you want to do. If you're open to it, Why only 5 years?
There's two answers to that. There's two parts to it. The first one is the further I got into being a police officer and being, this sounds very trite, but being successful at being a police officer was the amount of paperwork involved with doing that job. So out of every 100 days, if I'm an active police officer, I'm probably doing 60 days of paperwork. So I'm only actually getting to do 40 days of the job that I like. And it's actually worse now. You know, I speak to people who I joined with and I listen to what they're going through. And I think, yeah, I actually made the right decision. The other thing was that I got married at a fairly tender age. And being a police officer and being newly married with my wife just didn't gel. And I was in a situation where if I'd stayed another year, maybe 2 years, I would have been financially tied to the job. I wouldn't have been able to afford to leave and take a change in financial circumstances and build out. So it was a little bit of timing as well.
You know, I've had the opportunity to speak to more than a few people on this podcast over the year or so. And there's been several that have come on that have said that they had a passion and a vision for being a lawyer. But then similar to what you just mentioned, it was almost a bit glamorized, like, oh, you see these TV shows and a lawyer, and then you realize that most lawyers never even get inside of a courtroom. It's all bogged down in paperwork. And so it sounds like you were in a similar capacity there. I'm curious about something, Tim. How disappointing was that for you to realize that this is what you want to do? You achieve that, but then most of what you're doing is actually not, you know, out in front of people serving the public and kind of, you know, being a cop.
It was a major reality check. And whilst I can look back and say that on its day, being a policeman in the UK is the best job in the world. Those days are very, very few and far between. And I think if I'd gone in and after 18 months walked away disillusioned, I'd probably have some regrets, but I did 5 years. I gave it a really good try. I put everything I had into it, and I just realized that, this is what I always wanted to do, but I've done it. It's no longer what I want to do. I don't want to be this person that spends, you know, 2/3 of his time writing reports.
Yeah. Was it a long process from when you first made the decision mentally to when you actually put in your resignation, or was it pretty quick when you actually ended your tenure?
Yeah, it was pretty quick.
Was it?
Whilst the concept of leaving had been there for a while, impetuous, a little bit immature, made a snap decision, and then realized I was way behind the eight ball and had to really run to catch up to actually make that decision work. A very valuable life lesson there.
Yeah, fair enough. And so when you decided to leave it, you actually, created that, you know, reality. Did you have a job to go to, or did you quit with no job and then you were going to figure it out?
You quit with no job. And then I was going to figure it out.
Wow. Well, newly married, no job.
Mortgage.
And you're like, yeah, a mortgage. Yeah, no doubt. And so how long were you out of work? And what, you know, you clearly wanted to do that if you were, talk about letting go of the branch, right?
Yeah. I mean, back then, was it 1991, 92, there really wasn't, we just got into a huge recession.
Yeah.
The UK economy just pulled out of the ERM, the Single Monetary Union, in Europe. The interest rates on my mortgage went from 7% to 14.5% in 2 weeks.
It's crazy.
And there was really very, very little out there that a trained police officer could do. The one thing that the British police force in particular teaches you to do, because we're unarmed, we don't carry guns.
Right.
They teach you to talk. And so I was tailor-made for getting into a role where I can talk a lot.
All right. And what'd you do?
I went into real estate.
Real estate?
Yeah.
Like literally, did you become a real estate agent?
Yeah, straight away. I walked out. I actually went in slightly different in the UK. Particularly back then, there was no licensing involved. I walked in as a junior negotiator with no salary, commission only.
Yeah.
And in the middle of one of the biggest housing recessions in modern history in the UK. I was selling houses at 50% of their value the year before.
Wow. You know, I've never done it, but I've had the opportunity and privilege to work with what I do for a living. I work with a lot of commercial real estate companies, residential, we've worked with in commercial as well. That'll put hair in your chest, man, to become a real estate agent and all commission, and you're out there. And then you talk about being, you know, in a recession. Any moments of what have I done?
Oh,
and regrets of like, I should, honey, I got to go back. Like, this isn't going to work here.
What I would say is, yeah, many, many times of what the hell have I done, but never a regret.
Okay. That's an interesting distinction.
Yeah. And that's why I say I was always very, very comfortable with the decision to leave the police force.
Okay.
The way that I left, I probably would change. If I could go back, I would plan it a little better. But the actual decision to leave and actually leaving, no regrets whatsoever. And getting into real estate, no regrets whatsoever. Because I didn't know it at the time that I joined, but real estate was my first introduction to sales management.
Mm.
And sales management has taken me all over the world and has given me a life beyond imagination.
So let's talk about the 90s, because there's a few listeners who probably were barely even born, maybe, you don't call it the 90s, but I certainly was around and old enough to remember that. You know, right now it's choppy waters. Now it's not really that great in the world, but the 90s were no picnic either. And so what was that decade like for you?
The first part of the decade was really tough. Like I said, my first time buyer, I mortgaged myself to my maximum to buy a house. Mm. And my mortgage payments doubled in literally a matter of 2 weeks, to the extent where my mortgage payment was more than what I was earning as a police officer.
Wow.
So I had three jobs. I drove a car that had every panel on the car was a different color, you know, because it's just nothing added up. But that was the darkest point of the 90s. And as the 90s went on, it improved. Economies grew, earning capacity grew. By the end of the 90s, I was in a almost financially free position through the various career moves that I made. And it, as I said, it all sparked from becoming a manager in real estate and being able to leverage that into other positions. I'm a great believer in, if you know how to manage, you should be able to manage any position in any company,
right?
Because management is about getting the most out of the people that work for you.
Yeah, that's a fair comment. And I think anybody who is a manager can probably appreciate that. You just have to tack the product or what you manage behind it. But the skill set is you can carry with you anywhere you go.
Absolutely.
So you mentioned, you know, as you were introducing yourself at the beginning of the podcast, that you've had the privilege of traveling, you know, through many places of the world. So now you're in Southern California. When did you leave the UK for the first time and where'd you go?
I left the UK in 1996, so I was 26 years old, and I went to Bahrain in the Middle East.
Oh, okay. Well, so you went to the Middle East, like listen, that's kind of choppy times. I mean, there was the Kuwait War, and so what drew you there?
So at the time, I was working for a major food retailer in the UK, a company called Tesco's, and I was headhunted by a company in the Middle East, because they were looking for a very specific skill set for the company that they had. And there were about five people in my company in Tesco's that had that skill set. And my dad, who sadly is not with us anymore, I was given a one-year contract. And my dad said, it's a one-year contract. Even if you hate it, you've got to go and do it. Because if you don't, you'll wake up one morning and you'll think, what if? And the company I was working for, Tesco's, have said, take the job. In a year's time, come back. We'll have a position for you, because you will learn things that we can't teach you. We have no means of teaching, because you're dealing with a smaller company that's scaling, that has so different social issues, different financial issues that a big, huge multinational conglomerate like Tesco's just didn't deal with anymore.
So did you have to bring in your sales skills into selling your wife into going?
You know, I don't think so.
No? Okay. She was on board?
Yeah, I think she was on board because she saw it as an adventure.
Okay.
Right. And, you know, tax-free salary,
expat,
in a nice place, etc., meant she didn't have to work.
Got it. So did you go there under the guise of 1 year back to the UK?
Absolutely. This was a stepping stone for me moving up.
Okay.
Position. I would have left at like an assistant manager level, and I would have come back at minimum general manager, or maybe an area manager type position.
And is that how it played out?
No. Nothing like that.
Why would it, right? Why would it? Okay. All right. So how long were you in Bahrain?
I was in Bahrain for a year.
Or you were a year. Okay. But you didn't go back to the UK.
No, I didn't.
Oh, where'd you go?
So the consulting firm that recruited me were working with another company in Egypt. And the company in Egypt wanted to build a chain of supermarkets in Egypt. And at that time, no supermarkets existed. There were none. It was all, you wanted meat, you went to a butcher. You wanted fruit and veg, you went to the fruit and veg guy. You wanted fish, you went to a fishmonger. There was nothing like a supermarket. And the owner of that company approached the owner of the company I was working for and said, hey, I'd like to borrow Tim for 3 months just to get myself sorted out. I'll pay whatever you want to pay, but I just want to borrow him for 3 months. And the owner of my company said, absolutely not happening. So they came to me and said, would you like to take a position and we'll pay you full time? And who wouldn't? Getting an opportunity to build a company from scratch on somebody else's money. It was like, yes, sign me up.
And was your wife afforded the luxury of being a stay-at-home wife and mom perhaps at the time as well in Egypt, or no?
Actually, no, because during our time in Bahrain, my marriage came to an end.
Oh, okay.
So I actually went to Egypt as a single man, which was,
as it turns out,
it was probably better.
Okay.
It was probably better. You know, Egypt is with the best of the world. I love the country. My wife that I have now is Egyptian. I met her when I was in Egypt.
Oh, amazing. But
Egypt is a third world country and it has third world problems. And living somewhere like Bahrain, which was exceptionally modern, everything worked. To go to a country where nothing works, everything's fragmented, everything's confused, and everything's done at the last minute. Not everybody fits well in that environment. And I know many, many people who came to Egypt as an expat, lasted 2 months and left because they couldn't deal with the environment.
Right.
I thrived. It was tailor-made for me.
So I'm curious about this. So you go from the Ritz to Motel 6 as an example, or, you know, roadside. So how many years were you there?
In total, I was in Egypt for 10 years.
10 years consecutively?
Consistently, yeah.
Wow, consecutively.
Not with
10
the same
years.
Company, but okay. 10 years consistently.
Okay. So now if I have my time right, then we're now into the 2000s. Mm-hmm. Okay. So over here on this side of the world, in particular in the US, a lot of hostility towards the Middle East from a lot of people because of what happened in 2001 with September 11th. And so how did you feel that at all, being a white man there during that time? Do you recall having any fear of, you know, will they mistake me as an American? Do you recall any feeling like that at all, Tim?
Absolutely none.
None.
Amazing. At no time did I feel in danger, that I feel threatened. You'd have, you know, the occasional teenager would say some stupid remark, but in general, absolutely not.
Amazing. Okay. So 10 years in Egypt, you go there under probably, I guess at the time, difficult circumstances in terms of you being there single versus being married. And so you have to manage that, but then you make 10 years out of it. And you flourish, I imagine, for you to last a decade there. What was behind your decision to move on, and where'd you go?
So the decision to move was actually my wife's decision. She's a doctor. And she was offered a position in San Diego 15 years ago.
Oh.
And at that time, all the things that I had done in Egypt had run their course, and I was looking for something different. The last 2 years I was in Egypt, I actually was working more in Europe than I was in Egypt in a sales capacity. And it was just, you know, a perfect storm. My course had run. She had this fantastic opportunity to come to the States. So we packed up, put the three kids on an airplane and the dog, and flew to San Diego.
Okay. So in your 10 years in Egypt, you met your now wife and you become a dad three times mm-hmm. over. And so, you know, if you think back about your career and, you know, obviously a meandering path, did you recall any, until your wife got offered this job, was there any aspirations to go to the US at all at any point? Or was it just kind of like, eh, if it happens, it happens?
The exact opposite.
She had to sell you.
She didn't have to sell me because, you know, I would expect her to support me in any decision I have. So I had to support her in that decision. But prior to that, I had no interest in ever going to the US, let alone living and relocating there. I just had no interest in being in North America. I went to, I did some market research with the company Tops International. I went to Buffalo and I went three times for a week each time doing some consulting work for them. And I was just like, it's confirmed everything I thought I knew about the US. I don't want to go.
Totally. You can't go to Buffalo and get a full picture of the US. I mean, I'm a Toronto boy, so I can say that because, you know, Buffalo is not exactly Manhattan, right?
So, So, I mean, when my wife was offered the position, they said, look, come out, bring your husband out. Let's have a look. Mm. So we came out for 5-day fact-finding trip. And I kid you not, we arrived at 8 a.m. on a Wednesday morning in March in San Diego Airport. And we drove from there to the harbor where I had pancakes at like 8:30 in the morning. Beautiful sunshine, sat on the harbor. I looked at my wife. I said, well, I've made my decision.
Yeah.
Just like.
Well, I mean, San Diego, I mean, Southern California overall, but San Diego in particular is probably one of my favorite areas to visit because it's so pretty. Anybody who's been to Coronado Island with the bridge going across and the harbor mm-hmm. and the seawall. And I mean, it's so appealing. And especially when your first story was the Northeast, I don't know mm-hmm. when you were there, but you know, in the Buffalo in the winter is terrible. And so then all of a sudden you go to California and I can see the appeal there. But mm-hmm. so in all seriousness, I'm kind of kidding as well. If she'd been offered a job in Buffalo or in Cleveland or in Detroit or Boston, something that offers the four seasons, would that have been a harder, longer process, do you think? Possibly.
I think there would have been more of a discussion.
Okay. Yeah.
You talk about Buffalo in the winter. That is again, true story. I was staying in a motel and a storm came through and in the morning I was on the ground floor and in the morning I opened up the door to walk out and it was just a big wall of white. I had to dig my way out of the front door. And it was just like, yeah, this is exactly not what I wanted.
Yeah, the lake effect off of Lake Erie and Buffalo is second to none on some days here. So, okay. So when did you land in California?
2007.
So 2007. Okay. So now we're coming up 14 years almost, give or take.
Yeah.
And so when you came to California, did you have a job with your previous company or did you move with no job and then you'd have to figure it out?
I moved here with absolutely nothing.
Nothing.
So, for visa purposes, initially I had to either buy a company or build a company.
Mm.
So initially I built a company. Oh, sorry.
Okay.
I bought a company.
You bought a company.
I bought a company.
Okay. Yeah. So you bought it. What industry was similar industry or just something to put your name on it?
Yeah, it was, you won't believe this. It was a trash hauling and tree service business.
All right. Okay. Let me do a recap here. Okay. So you became a police officer. You get into commercial real estate. You then get into supermarkets. You're in the Middle East and then now you're hauling garbage.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
It was, first of all, it was in my price range, first and foremost, but also it was something totally different. It was not in an office. There was no pressure. It was fun. It really was fun. But what I actually learned was it was also very, very hard work. And it's a young man's game, not an old man. You know, I was in my 40s then.
Got it.
Late 30s. And it nearly killed me. It really
but
did.
But it's noble just, work, absolutely. I mean, honestly, oh, yeah.
And so much fun. I mean, who yeah. wouldn't want to play with a chainsaw all day long? Yeah. Come on. You know?
Totally, yeah.
Just the, you know, the whole lumberjack image, you know, the shirt with over the shoulder,
yeah.
walking around, driving a pickup truck, you know, just like the American
So what
dream.
Happened to the business? Did you shelve it? Did you sell it? What happened?
I built it up and sold it. So you when I took it over, it was a one-man operation. When I sold it, I had 5 full-time employees. I developed different sides to the business. I actually developed the recycling aspect to the business. There was the trash hauling side, and then there was the tree side. So I split it into three divisions and then sold it.
All right. And so were you looking for something a little bit more in line with your background, with your age, with both? And what'd you end up doing?
I opened a restaurant.
Oh, well, that's pretty easy.
No.
I mean, there's no hours in restaurant. There's no risk in a restaurant. I mean, talk about taking the safe route, Tim. Good man.
Two years without a day off.
Jeez.
2 years without a day off.
Well, listen, congratulations on keeping the business open for 2 years, because, I mean, the restaurant business is tough as nails.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. I ended up having 2 locations. If you know San Diego well, then you know that La Jolla is a nice area for people who come for vacation. And then I also opened on the San Diego State University campus.
Oh, you did. Okay. Well. Okay. And so a restaurateur, now we can add to the to the chisel here as I'm making out your resume. And so did the restaurants, did you sell them? Did they fail? Did you just
sold
enough
them.
As you sold them? Okay.
Sold them. Yeah.
Okay.
I think in total, I think it was always like 3.5 years from the time we started building the first one. At the time I sold it, was like 3.5 years.
All right. So what was next?
Next, but at that point, my wife had got a citizenship. So I had a green card. So I could now get a proper job.
Okay.
And I took over as the CEO of an adventure race company. So it sounds a little bit weird, but it was basically sales and operations.
Or you became technically an employee, CEO yep. of the company, because you now had that opportunity because your wife became a citizen.
Exactly. Okay. So I had my green card and I was able to get a proper job rather than. Yeah. Well,
and so why not start with CEO?
Well, you know,
not?
All of the background experience that I had actually set me up really well for that position.
Hmm.
You know, I scaled businesses, I'd run sales operations. I understood, you know, the supply and demand. And I knew that I didn't know anything about marketing. So I didn't get involved in that. And I had somebody specifically that did that. And in a 2-year period, we turned the company around. And we had 300% sales growth.
Wow.
Over a 2-year period.
Wow.
And it was, what I would say about that position was it made me realize how many skills I'd actually learned on my odyssey. And I was given the opportunity to deploy all of them at once. And it was, very, very rewarding and very, very motivating. You know, you get real estate, working in supermarkets,
yeah.
you know, tree business, restauranting, etc. All of these gave me skills and I was able to deploy all of them in one go.
Wow, that's amazing. I mean, Tim, you've had quite the ride here. I mean, from what you've been sharing thus far, I want to talk to you about 2020. And as you know, we're recording this literally on January 4th, and it's the mm-hmm. first business day for most of us as we mm-hmm. you know, kick off this new year. And I think, you know, this New Year's Eve was probably one that was celebrated by so many, just even mentally, to get out of 2020.
Yeah.
And so I'm curious about yourself, because you mentioned that your wife is a doctor. Mm-hmm. And so she's had to manage this, I presume. My wife's a nurse, and you know, being a sales guy married to somebody in healthcare, I'll be the first to tell you, I have no idea what they go through. day in and day. I mean, I sell stuff. I teach people how to sell. Like, I think I work hard, but it's like they're literally saving lives and risking their lives here. And so, you know, I've learned a lot this year. And I know you took a new job, you know, really in the heart of when this thing was coming to page one, March, April of 2020. And so how have you managed the last 9-10 months, both personally and professionally?
Personally, I'm going to reiterate what you just said. I'm in awe of my wife for what she does. And the fact that despite the earnings capacity of a doctor in the US, she doesn't do it for the money. It's all for the love of what she does. Mm. And she puts 110% into everything she does every single day. She's not a frontline doctor. She's a specialist, but still, every time you walk into a hospital at the moment, you are
totally
taking your life in your own hands there. So there is a stress element that went with that. Probably up until, I'd probably say about June, until the health community really got a handle on what was safe and what wasn't safe, what you should do, what you shouldn't do, how you should act and interact. And once that was put in place, the ride has become a lot more smooth because everybody knows what's expected of them. My wife does a lot of telemedicines now. She does a lot of Zoom meetings instead of face-to-face clinic meetings. And the nice part of that is she's able to do a lot of those from home. So there are now days where she will spend at home and do all her work, you know, sat on the sofa, talking to her patients, which she's never had the opportunity to do. And it's really nice having her at home while she's doing that. Professionally, the company that I work for teach people how to build online businesses. But the way that we went about enrolling people in this was through 2-day seminars all over the US.
Okay.
So when COVID hit, we'd done four before it was like mid-February, everything cut off. And we had to pivot the whole business. And it was just like, well, we teach people how to do stuff online. This is the perfect opportunity for us to go online.
Right.
So we then took everything online. As it happens, most of the company works remotely anyway. So we didn't have that aspect to worry about. And we've broken all records this past year.
No kidding. Congratulations. Now,
I would like to think that part of that is my input. But I'm not naive enough to think that it's just me. But I honestly believe that because we took it online, we were able to reach more people more of the time. You know, we've been able to get into the UK market without having to spend a dollar. We got into Australia and into the Far East without spending a dollar, just by moving online.
Tim.
And it's just got faster and faster and faster through 2020.
And how are your kids?
We're empty nesters. So,
okay. So they're not in school. They're all gone. Okay.
My eldest is married. She lives in, Victoria, British Columbia.
Oh, Canada. Okay, good.
Yeah. My middle daughter has just graduated, from UCLA, and she's in the process of applying to medical schools. Now she's going to go into the medical field. And my son, he's got 1 year left at university, but until he can go back and study on campus, he's taking a break.
Okay.
He just doesn't see the point in spending a large sum of money to be taught via Zoom. So he's sort of having a bit of a sabbatical.
Got it. Good. Well, Tim, it's been such a pleasure speaking to you. You've had quite the ride up until this point. And so, you know, I always like to ask anybody as I wrap up a podcast, if there was one thing, what's been your foundation?
I've never said no to an opportunity. Some of the opportunities that have been presented to me at first sight, it was like, oh, what am I doing? Why have I done this? But I would not be in the position I'm at now with the experience that I have. And the memories, ignoring the professional side of it, the memories that I've got just by saying yes to an opportunity that comes in front, because I'm a firm believer that you don't get asked twice.
You know, it's so funny that you say that, because my mom, who is now a widow, for 5+ years or so now, decided to take a trip to Europe on a tour. And that was a big thing for her to go, you know, on her own on this type of a trip. And I remember her telling me that my cousin said to her, when you're on this trip, 2-week tour or whatever, whatever it was, just say yes to everything. So they want you to ride a donkey, like go say yes, like just like you want to go to this, just say yes to everything. And she did follow that. And to your point, her trip, well, granted, it's only a 2-week trip versus your entire life, of course, but the memories versus I'm not going to do that. She says it was second to none. And so it's amazing that that's been your foundation. Just I've never said no. And then look where you are.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, and, you know, you make the most of what you've been dealt with.
Yeah.
If you've said yes and you've committed, it's then down to you to make the most of it.
Yeah. Tim, man. What an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for being here. It's been a lot of fun speaking to you.
It's been an absolute honor. Thank you so much for the invitation.
So welcome. All right, everybody, let's wrap this one up right now. Remember, your intention matters. Why? Because that's the result you'll tend to get. We're out of here. Happy New Year, everybody. We'll do it again next week. And of course, be safe.